Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie the Sulk and JC.
And it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. And Goldie, JC, it's
beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
This is Christmas Day. This is coming out on Christmas Day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is my
chocolate. Sorry, I had you muted.
First joke of the day.
By the way, I thought you're in the catbird seat with these first jokes of the day because you get to hear me say straight, boring stuff at first, and then you get to just jump in.
You don't have to say boring stuff.
I have to set up the show.
You're a writer. You could prepare.
Folks, I could say, hey, folks, you ever notice how on airplanes?
Yes, no. There you go. Right in. Jump
I like
right
to have
in.
It
we'll
be
figure it out.
More of a natural conversation, which is me saying straight stuff, and then you saying the first snarky thing, which is great.
You begin your conversations. Hi, we're having a conversation. Do you just say something?
I just intro the podcast. I care about the brand. I don't. You know, I don't know if you noticed we were 214th in India last week.
Wow. Yeah. Alec, the brand sulking.
Second joke of the day.
Oh, call me Elton. Elton Brand. Yeah, been traveling all day. I'm a little punchy, but it is Christmas, and we just came back from Colorado to now here.
I don't know
for our
Indian listeners, I'm not sure whether that hits.
Oh, that's right.
Hits home as much.
What?
Christmas? That it's Christmas. I mean, it's.
Oh, that's
they don't care
as
much. No.
Right. Yeah, don't bait me into an Indian voice if that's where this is going.
No, I don't want to do that. No, we're not doing that
because we love.
I mean,
India.
But what would that sound like?
A billion people and 214th. A billion.
That's
people.
Not bad.
That's not bad.
That's true. No. If there's a
that's
billion
not
people.
Bad. I'm gonna start forwarding you guys this thing. I get this thing called Chartable Digest, and every week it sends. Wow. And some weeks we're just out in every country, and other weeks it's like, holy shit, India.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, been traveling all day. Came back here to Cape Cod. And haven't been here in a while. Went upstairs.
And it's beginning to smell a lot like rat piss.
Oh, no.
Not really.
It just smells like dead animal up
here. How do you know what rat piss smells like?
Oh, true. I lived in New York.
Oh,
okay.
I never knew
they were really pissing and stuff.
Oh,
I mean, I knew
always.
They were rats, but I didn't smell their piss. I thought that was human
always.
Piss.
It could have
I know,
been.
It's
it
true.
Smells like human piss. You're right, but I'm assuming it wasn't a human who was pissing in our house. I think it was an animal of some kind.
Yeah, right. Probably. I mean, I can't imagine a rat can create a stink with its piss, though.
Oh,
you can't?
How much could it be pissing?
Well, but we haven't been here in months. So if it pisses one tiny thimble once a day, that's a lot after a while.
I don't know.
Anyway,
listen, man. How do we get more of the rats?
Christmas. It's
oh, right.
Christmas.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah. What are
do
you
doing? Do you celebrate Christmas?
Do we? No.
Yeah.
Not at all. Not even close.
We do.
Okay.
You do? Yeah. I wish
we did.
Oh,
yeah, of course.
I love it.
I thought so. Yeah. I remember the bike. I remember that when you gave one of your daughters a
that
bike.
That was like 2 years ago. I gave my youngest kid a bicycle, and she didn't know what a bicycle was.
I'll never forget that.
This year, I've really set myself up for greater success, though, because I can say it here because she doesn't listen. I think she knows what a new iPad is.
Wow. Oh, she's going to lose it.
I think my oldest will know what Melanie Martinez tickets are.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
That is
Melanie Martinez is for people who think Taylor Swift is like basic bitch.
Basic. I love it.
It's like Melanie Martinez is cool and kind of like indie and weird and stuff.
That's awesome.
So my kids are more into Melanie Martinez. They don't care about Taylor Swift, actually.
That's awesome.
Look at them going against the grain.
Yeah.
Just like which is a little sad because it would be an easy thing. It's like if someone doesn't like McDonald's, which they also don't, that you go, well, that easy thing is off the table.
Yeah. No, McDonald's is the greatest easy thing. It's such an easy, absolutely.
Yeah. So you go, okay, no McDonald's, no Taylor Swift, but Melanie Martinez and I don't know if there's like a Coco's.
Right. I don't even know what Coco's is. Let's call it.
Coco's is for people who don't have the guts to go to a Denny's.
I've never heard of it.
It's just, imagine if you were like, look, I can't go into a Denny's and spend that kind of money.
Oh, okay.
But I can eat some pancakes that are okay.
Okay,
you might go to Coco's.
Well, so it's funny you bring up Melanie Martinez, who I've never heard of, but Levy's been really into Will Willis lately. He's
Will
been
Willis.
Climbing up the charts.
Will Willis.
Will Willis. He went to my high school, Scully remembers.
No, I know. I remember. Yeah. I'm not walking into that again.
No. So Goldie, you're excited for Christmas with the kids. You think you nailed it with their presents.
Yeah, and I'm already in the Christmas spirit because a couple nights ago, there's this thing in Los Angeles called Descanso Gardens, which is just a shockingly beautiful garden in the La Cañada region. It's acres and acres. It's bigger than you think. It's nicer than you think. And then they do this light show that's very impressive. It sells out every year. It's hard to get tickets. My wife managed to get them somehow. Shout out to her.
Yeah.
So we went. And then at these things, you know, when I was growing up, there was a frugality that I like to fight against. So for example, if I was, you know, as a youngster somewhere and they were selling food and I said, oh, you know, can I have a hot dog? I went, yeah, we'll eat when you get home. we're not buying that for you. You know, so now it's like my kid, you know, wanted a hot dog. And it's like, you can have a,
sure.
Hot dog.
Yeah.
Then there's churros, which, you know, are these sort of Mexican cinnamon stick cookies.
Yeah, we know what
they're not. Everyone loses their mind over them.
Right.
They're fine.
They're fine.
I agree.
It's like, you know, croissants where people are like, oh, a croissant. It's like, it's fine. It's nothing to.
Fried dough way better.
Fried dough's fine.
I don't know.
It's
isn't
all
that a donut.
These are all good. Cotton candy, it's fine.
Yeah.
But who cares? Anyway, churros. She wants the churros. You can have the churros. Great. You know, I'd like a little hot chocolate. You know what? Dad writes for Family Guy.
Yeah.
You can have the hot chocolate.
There you go.
Family Guy's not going anywhere unless there's something you haven't told me.
No. What?
So you know, she's eating a decent amount, but I don't think about it and I don't care. And I'm happy to drop the, you know, $21 or whatever it was.
Right.
So then, you know, we go to bed and here's what were the bed arrangements. So I start out with my daughter in her bed. Try to follow this. My wife and the dog are in our bed.
Yes. Okay.
I then go back to my own bed with my wife.
Yes. Yeah.
At that point, my daughter comes into our bed.
Okay.
My wife then goes into my daughter's bed.
Okay. The empty bed.
Yes.
She's smart.
The dog follows my wife.
Oh, God.
So now no one is in the bed they started in.
But everyone's in the same arrangement.
Everyone's in a different bed. And, you know, this is like taken a few hours for everyone to arrange.
Right.
And then the dog comes back into my bed. So everyone switched beds at least once.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so then my daughter at about 2 a.m, she starts making this noise like, and
your daughter.
Yes. And I'm like, is she dying? But I'm very tired. So I'm like, probably not. Like if she was an elderly person, I would think she was dying. But since she's young, I was like, she's probably not dying. But it doesn't sound good. And then she's like, water. And you go, well, that's not how you ask me for water, but okay. Yeah. So,
you're reverting back to your parents now.
I get the water, but I would like some water, please.
Sort
of how I might want to be asked or, you know, hey, I know I should go get my own water. I don't want to get but whatever. It's just water. Okay, so I go, I get the water and she chugs the water. Like she just ran off the field after, you know, scoring a kickoff touchdown.
Right.
Even though she's done nothing. So, okay, she chugs it and then just falls back to sleep. And I go, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I never sleep, but I'm, you know, lying still.
Breathing.
At the ready.
Yeah. So then about 45 minutes later, she sits up again and she's making that same type of breathing.
Ooh.
And something hits me and I say, you're not going to throw up, are you? And as I say you, I would say 3/4 gallon water, hot dog, churro,
hot chocolate.
There's some cheese curls in there. There might have been like an earlier slice of pizza or something. It lands on my chest, my arm, my thigh, my side, my neck, and my face.
Oh no!
It is all over.
Did you
me.
Start barfing?
And
I would have for sure started.
She's screaming.
Oh, no.
And I don't know how you would have handled it, but I just very loudly said, "What the fuck?" So that was good. She was screaming.
God.
And so then my wife gets up and she's like, what's happening? You know, what's happening? And it's like, well, okay, she's screaming. I'm covered in barf.
Can you figure this out?
What do you think? So now I'm just really upset.
Oh, of course.
And not handling it very well.
Yeah.
And so because I've been covered in barf, I do triage on the bed, which like, thank God we have a mattress pad and that held because, you know, a mattress is like $4,000 at this point.
Yeah.
The mattress is fine. Everything's fine. I got it all in the washing machine. My wife got my daughter settled down. And then I went right into the shower at about 3 a.m. But if you're in a shower at 3 a.m.,
<I know. laughs>
something has gone so far afield in your life. Like, I was like, I never want to be in this situation ever again. It's like you've either hit someone with your car or something like an animal. It's flown through the windshield. You've murdered someone.
Yeah, you're washing blood off.
You've committed a crime of passion.
You're
deathly ill.
You're right.
You're Alex Murtaugh on that fateful night.
So I was just standing there and I was like, this, I have to make a mental note that the only goal of life is to avoid being in the shower at 3 a.m., I think.
The only goal.
If you talk about being thankful, like, what are you thankful for? It's like, every day you're not in the shower at 3 a.m.
At 3 a.m., oh, my God.
Well, have you been barfed on?
But only a little. Like, not like that. Not
same.
Like that at
this
all.
This was, well, I think I've told this story. There was one time one of my kids barfed in the crib, and it looked like a salmon got murdered. And I had to clean the crib, but there was so much everywhere that I had to get naked to do it. So I was like that guy in Pulp Fiction who comes and cleans shit.
Yeah,
like,
the wolf.
I've got like, I'm like naked with bleach wipes in there.
Yeah.
But this was worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This sounds like a direct hit. Like the submarine did not survive this torpedo.
Yeah. It's like, you know, of course that was my reward for going against my parents.
Right. Yeah. Here, have the hot dog. Have the churro. Have the hot chocolate. Yeah. Well, you get it back.
Yeah.
Well, Somewhere your dad is looking down and smiling at you in that moment, just saying, I told you, Johnny.
I know.
Oh, God, yeah. That's great. That's
really funny. Well, oh, what a Christmas okay? story that was.
Yeah.
What a great Christmas tale. Well, yeah. You know what, though? I'm just fired up to get into Jimmy Carr. So we're excited for that. So, you know what? He's coming out here for top for
this
Johnny
might
jokes.
Be our finest hour.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Are we ready? We're recording? Okay. Oh, soft intro. Franz, we are incredibly excited today. First of all, we're doing this in person. Goldie's got some stuff to say about that. But we have today, this is the soft intro. English comedian Jimmy Carr, one of the best in the world, is here with us today. For some reason, he found us. He likes us. So he's here.
Well, he found us.
We don't know if he likes
us,
but
which
he
is
found
fine.
Us.
We're so grateful.
But, you know, a lot of quote-unquote funny people come on this program, writers, comics, and they beg off the Johnny jokes. They ignore them. They shrug them off. They kind of chuckle at us when we ask them if they'd like to do it, and then they don't do it. So they are cowards. We've called them that before many times. Jimmy Carr is not a coward. He is going to be closing our Johnny jokes today, and we could not be more excited. So let's get
well,
right
that's,
in.
That's testament to the fact you have not heard these Johnny jokes.
I know, but
20 minutes of Scrabble together, nothing.
Yeah, that's what we do every week.
Topical news? Okay, yeah, sure. Why not?
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So that's our way of getting into this week's very special Johnny Jokes.
We're doing this first, I guess. I thought we would interview the guy. Anyway, from Hollywood, here's Jimmy and Johnny's.
Oh, boy. Is that ever louder than everyone else?
Well, you're not interviewing it's the guy. Sure.
No, this is great. This is straight in, no kissing.
This is what we do.
Yes,
this
exactly.
is what we do.
Straight for the...
This was the plan. This was the plan.
Okay.
There was a plan.
Getting into Johnny jokes. Here we go. Maybe you heard about this sad story. TV writer and legend Norman Lear passed away last week at the age of 101.
He gone.
Nice. You all got
nice.
It.
Thank you.
Lear was briefly canceled during the Me Too movement until he officially changed his name to Norman Asexual Glance.
Oh,
Norman Asexual Glance. And we're off and limping.
First joke of the day.
First joke of the day. No, it isn't.
Yeah, that didn't quite qualify. We'll get there with one of them. Cobble together a couple of these. Okay. Well, maybe you heard about this, Jimmy, being you're from across the pond. New daylight laws for sex workers in Amsterdam could severely reduce their legal hours of operation. Area prostitutes have vowed to take the restrictions lying down. All right, we're getting there.
I notice we're all doing the thing that it's a very comic thing. We're looking at our jokes as you're doing yours, instead of paying attention to yours.
Well, I always go first, and that always I'm victim of that. But
yeah,
I understand.
Like these extra 2 seconds are like,
I know.
These are going to change into good jokes.
I know.
As right. I look at them during your
well,
jokes.
By the
I'm
way, they are
we should
magic.
Be learning from this example.
Yeah,
yeah.
They are learning what not to do.
Right. Yeah. They are magically changing
also,
to good jokes.
Are you looking at me for first joke of the day?
Am I looking at you for the first joke of the day? I mean, I think like all avid listeners, we know that doesn't
that goes to Goldie.
Right. Doesn't go to the Salk.
And it won't be during Johnny's.
No, we do that.
No, this is just like, you know, it's like a Far Side cartoon of the cows watching the other cow go to the slaughterhouse and going like, I wonder if it'll be different when I'm.
Yeah, exactly right. All right. Two more. I know. I'm sorry. Universal Pictures has decided to release Oppenheimer in Japan. I don't know. I think it might bomb. It might not do well.
Oh, come on.
It might not do well.
Thank you. I've arrived. There you go.
Wow. Joke three of arrived.
Yeah, that's a great joke.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate that. High praise. All right. Final one from me. Thank God. Buffalo Bills coach Sean McDermott is in hot water after it was revealed that he used the 9/11 hijackers as an example of great teamwork in a speech to his players. This is true. The speech must have worked, however, as the Bills immediately took down the Jets. Thank you. Wow. Look at this. I mean, gentleman brings applause.
This is fantastic joke.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, what a recovery.
What a recovery. Yeah. He's got to point it out. Well, second Johnny.
In honor of our guest, King Charles and Prince William are reportedly dealing with fallout from allegedly making racist comments about Meghan Markle. Charles and William deny any racism, saying they wouldn't like Meghan even if she was white.
not a likable person.
Okay. Britney Spears' father, Jamie, has had his leg amputated.
Ooh.
Ooh.
The leg is still closer to him than Britney. Okay.
They don't like each other.
Music mogul P. Diddy is being accused of participating in a gang rape. Diddy denies the charges, saying he didn't rape the woman, he just sampled her.
That's good. That's a
I have
good
to follow
joke.
This.
Yeah. And by the way, he was doing what you were doing. He was looking at his jokes.
Believe me, going last sucks. A tourist has died in the world's tallest bungee jump.
He
goes.
Nice. Very fast.
Yeah. He'll be buried as soon as he stops bouncing. I'll just put. I'll do a Norm.
All right.
Yeah. A Norm McDonald. Hunter Biden is being indicted by the federal government. Yeah. Now, with the election coming up, Republicans are going to seize on this as a great opportunity to look at more pictures of his dick.
Excellent.
Okay, so Johnny jokes.
Johnny three.
Now, imagine a Brit had got the job. I'm still a little bit hungover from World AIDS Day. if you're not familiar, it's kind of like Christmas for AIDS, but it's more I'm dreaming of a white blood cell.
Oh my God!
I think that's why it's called a retrovirus, because AIDS makes you kind of nostalgic for 80s pop and Ronald Reagan. The Republican candidates. I'm going to talk about the Republican candidates. This would be my monologue. It's weird seeing a cast of characters like that without having the Joker at the head of the table saying, let's squeeze Gotham for all it's worth. Chris Christie? Chris Christie is one and a half of the worst candidates in history. He's waddling for office. Ron DeSantis has that puffy, worried-looking face. He looks like he just got off the phone to John Wick and he's thinking, I shouldn't have killed that guy's dog. Why is Ron DeSantis wearing lifts? Why not just be short? Prince was 5'2". No one gives a shit. Paul Simon was 5'1". Legend. Drake is 5'. Great. John Lennon was 4'8". People still love him. No one in Pink Floyd is over 4'. Elvis was 9 inches tall. Okay, back to the Republican candidates. Vivek Ramaswamy, he was an intern at Goldman. He worked at a hedge fund and he launched a pharmaceutical company. He's like, guys, trust me, I'm a cunt.
That's my favorite word.
Of all the candidates, Nikki Haley looks like she'd be the best at balancing raising a family with running a concentration camp. At this point, Biden's presidency is best described as elder abuse. I think Joe Biden thinks he's on an extended tour of the White House. Every day he's like, wow, all this for $9? Stand by. Henry Kissinger died.
Oh.
Oh.
Here goes!
I think he just got too excited about the bombing of Gaza. I think we can all agree his best year, Kissinger's best year, was 1973 when he won the Nobel Peace Prize and was Napalm Magazine's Man of the Year. That's maybe the last one.
Bravo.
Wow.
Bravo.
Unbelievable. To see, that's... Great job. I mean... Listeners, you can hear the difference there.
It's hard to enjoy that and not just feel ashamed.
Yeah, no,
I had to. But the Republican candidates as well was like a Google search of, oh, that man is fat. Okay, easy. that woman looks like a Nazi.
I know, you're right. She does. But the thing with that is like, and Goldie just said it very well. Like, it's hard not to. I'm laughing the whole way through. But there's also that 50% of me that's Salieri-ing, crumpling my jokes in my hand and cursing God.
Stop it. I'm a big fan of this podcast, but I'm a big fan of you guys as writers. I thought obviously people that listen to this will listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
Last week's episode where you went through where you wrote the episode live.
Yeah.
Best episode there's ever been. It was so fantastic. On that build on the thing. Like, for me, that could be the podcast every week of going, just seeing the craftsmanship, like a one little bit and going through. And it was, for me, it was like the stuff that you went, yeah, it was more you sort of saying, well, actually, no, we're not going to do that trans joke. That's never going to make the script. It's just in for now, but it doesn't ring true.
Right.
And it was such a kind of, yeah, it's funny, but it's not funny enough. It doesn't kind of earn its place.
Correct.
And when he says that could be the show, what he's really saying is that should be
the show. I guess. No, well, that's...
but he's right.
First of all...
It's really interesting, that thing of like the layering that you guys do of jokes. And I've worked with other, I've worked with guys in the UK that are fantastic, my writers on TV shows. But
right.
Jesse Joyce is the guy I like out here, who I think you know a little bit.
He's a friend of ours, yeah.
Just fantastic. But that thing of like the ethic of like just sitting down and writing that many jokes. And so many guys in my industry don't do it. So many guys go, oh, I'm working on something, and they work a little bit on stage. But like really putting in the hours of like, because the building blocks of this is, it's jokes.
Yes.
Yeah.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Well, nobody knows that better than you do. And I gave you a soft intro before. For Franz, if you don't know who we're talking to, this is legendary British comedian Jimmy Carr, TV personality, writer, actor, all the hyphenates and all that.
Really, really just a stand-up. I mean, all the other stuff. I always think that thing when stand-ups go, yeah, I'm going to go and act Avengers movie.
Right.
The fuck are you talking about? You've got the best job in the world. You want to go and sit in a trailer at 5 a.m.? What are you talking about? Why would you do that?
That answers one of my questions, which was because you do, if you read up on you and you search you on YouTube, many of the clips and things that come up are you, you know, on different television programs. Then there are your specials, which you're so prolific, which is amazing. But so I think you've just answered one of my questions was, you want to be just a stand-up. Like, you don't have a desire to be in an Avengers movie.
I'm quite stoic, like that idea of like, do less better. Just do one thing. Whether you got the world ordered a stand-up comedian, honor that. Be a stand-up comedian. It's a great gig. And that thing of like, if you've got a facility to write jokes, whether you want to be a performer or not, like the thing of the thing that you guys do of like going, okay, so you found this incredible show where you can just pack it full of jokes. And something about the simple thing that Family Guy has cutaways, you go, oh, everything is on the table.
Yes.
It goes out from every other sitcom that you go, well, of course.
Yeah.
We can't do a joke about the Boston Tea Party because this is set in 1970s Detroit. Right. You go, no, we can do jokes about anything.
Yes.
Well, it's nice to hear you say that because I feel like when we started doing stand-up in the 90s, it went from people telling jokes to people going up with a notepad, and part of it was this attitude of I'm working out stuff up here too, and this,
or I don't care,
this coolness about it. And you seem like the antidote to that, where you're like, hey man, for better or for worse,
I've worked on this. And then even when you go into the crowd, it's like, why the fuck would anyone say anything to you?
But like, the binary nature as well. I love the pass-fail. Like, that's what I really liked about last week's episode. Like, the thing about going, look, you try a joke and the audience laugh or they don't laugh. So the audience is a genius, the Lenny Bruce line. Right. The audience, like, I've never been to... I went up at the store last night after I did my show and tried some new shit. And you go... I always try new stuff at the end of the show. And you, it's binary. The audience have never been... Some of them have never seen live comedy before. And they know instinctively, that's funny, that's not funny. There's a group dynamic. And it's binary. So you go... It's tested by them. You get the feedback. Right. I mean, I always think the bad thing about your job is you don't get the immediate feedback on the someone rewinding the joke and watching it 10 times and you know that they loved it. What's the thing that they're going to... You don't get to see the laughter.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Can I ask you, does it... Because looking at it that way, which is how I always looked at it, and when I used to do stand-up, I would get annoyed that I felt they were judging me every joke and there were comedians who seemed to have money in the bank with the audience because of persona.
Well, and it's that thing as well where you go, you have zero charm.
Goldie and I had very little
incredible charisma.
Yeah,
and I think those two things get conflated, and I think it's easy to sort of think, like, if you watch people and they work on charm on stage, I often watch them and kind of, I used to kind of be a bit baffled and annoyed by it and go, well, how is that? There's just nothing. There's like four stories in 20 minutes.
But
they love them. They just want to spend time with them. And for me, it's more contractual.
Can you differentiate between charm and charisma? Because what do you think is the best
analogy would be Trump and Obama. So Obama is incredibly charming. He's head to the side. If you look at the cadence of his speech and the way he rolls, it's incredible. It's I come to you.
Right.
Trump is you come to me. It's a much more solid stance. And I suppose Angelina Jolie would be incredibly charismatic. She's on a pedestal. And Jennifer Aniston would be incredibly charming. Everyone wants to be a friend. And you go, well, they both get to fuck Brad Pitt. It's not that one's better than the other.
Right.
It's that thing that you go, one is... knowing what you are seems incredibly important in the world. It's something that I think we kind of lost a little bit of, like, knowing what you are and what your strong suit is.
Right.
So you go, you're not going to get love, but you've got an incredible charisma. Like, your voice, your whole thing, you feel like a fully formed sitcom character. It's just everything with your attitude. Like, when you rant, it's so funny.
Oh, I thought you meant the general sense. I just realized you were
talking. No, you're Goldie specifically. Your thing of, like, it's when you rant on stuff, it's so perfect.
Yeah.
It's so kind of
charismatic.
It's incredibly charismatic.
I appreciate that. It feels like desperate floundering.
That's part of the charisma.
But that's a truth.
Unending airplane crash is how it feels.
But I think Jimmy's right that people respond because it feels very authentic in you, which, you know.
But I mean, that's something that gets learned over years and years. Like, when I started doing stand-up, I honestly would, like you, I would went up and I wore a suit. Like, I didn't know what to do. So I would just tell, I would write, like, Leno jokes and be like, you read about this? I mean, I literally just would copy that.
But everyone does that. I mean, I think that thing about the reason the Johnny Jokes thing is so great, but that's the building block.
Yeah. You
go, that's going to the gym and going, okay, so how do jokes work and how... I'm working on, I think, at the moment, like, trying to codify jokes. Because it's right, music has a language. Comedy's very new. As an art form, like, if you look at what America's given the world, right? So it's the Western, jazz music, and stand-up comedy.
Right.
Of, like, the art forms that it's given the world. Wow. And you go, comedy's really new.
Yeah.
I mean, Pryor and Carlin are John the Baptist. It's like Jesus hasn't got here yet. It feels like it's quite a new thing, and it's not quite codified in the way that music is.
Yeah.
Right.
So when people are great joke writers, there's a lot of magical thinking with how do you write jokes. There's a lot of, wow, he's just a really funny guy. And that guy just says funny things. You go, well, no, there's a structure to that. It's not, I mean, maybe he's doing it with unconscious competence.
Right.
But we know what we're doing. If you watch a great Chappelle special, you can see what's going on.
Right. Yeah, and I was going to say, like, with music, often you are copying other styles of music that you like. And then the more you do it, that will seep into your own style and become your own style. So there is a translatable relationship.
But everything's like everyone's standing on the shoulders of giants. You go, and sometimes someone comes along and they do something genuinely new. I mean, I always think the great innovators in comedy are joke-to-joke comics. Who, like, we seem very arcane, but, like, in terms of structure and things, that's like, it changes it up because the frequency is, changes.
Well, your frequency is insane. And that's something having watched many of your specials, it was that by design early? Did you, because
I don't think you get to pick
really
who you are. I think it picks you.
Okay.
I think there's a weird thing where, like, when I was coming up, it's weird. It, like, wouldn't be people that would be, I think, regarded as the golden greats, but the people that were huge in the UK in the 80s when I was watching comedy would be people like Emo Phillips and Rita Rudner. Rita Rudner was like a big deal. She used to come over and do a show called Friday Night Live, and it was kind of, it was like you were seeing these people, and they were like a perfectly formed 5 minutes of comedy. Like, perfect 5 minutes.
Yep.
Like that thing of, like, almost like a Tonight Show set.
Yeah.
And I loved that, the sparsity. It's also, I think it's born of insecurity, although no one will ever buy the fact I'm insecure because look at me. but that thing
it.
Of like, you go, you don't want to waste anyone's time on stage.
Right.
Why am I telling you a story about
what
happened to my uncle? You know, maybe I earn that a little bit now. I will tell maybe a slightly longer story. So that differentiation between stand-up and jokes.
Right.
Mm. It's like, I'm not great. I'm all right at stand-up. I'm getting better at it. But jokes I'm good at. Jokes, I can do jokes.
Well, I was wondering as I was watching your specials, and what really impresses me is like the physical feat of the memory and the lightning fast, like synapse firing. And it's like, as you're up there, are you conscious of, okay, here's what's next? Like, are you playing a chess game 8 moves ahead, or are you just confident? Because I would just go, 3 minutes in, I'm going to blank and be like, what's next, guys? And you're going into the crowd. And like, what's going on in your head as you're doing
this? I think it's quite a lot of it is you're conducting. I hope this isn't boring, but it's that thing of like, you're being in an audience is performative. I'm very aware of what the audience are doing. So they're performing as well. Like, you know, the thing when you go and see a rock and roll show is the most obvious example. And the guy on stage says, how you doing? And everyone's,
yeah.
That doesn't happen in Starbucks.
No. Right.
The guy says, hey, how are you doing this morning? Yeah!
Incredible.
Psychotic. You laugh so much more when you're in a group, right? So mm-hmm. I think it's 30 times more.
Wow.
When you watch it on a screen, you watch my special on an iPhone on the way to, okay, he does that. That's funny. Yeah, it's a good joke. Right. Works.
Yeah.
But then when you're in a crowd with other people, you're showing them that it's a tribal thing. We're sort of connected and you're in this little tribe for the evening. So a lot of it is conducting. It's quite a physical thing doing stand-up, I think. And you're kind of, you're anchoring stuff with your hand movements and your facial movements. The eyes as well. I do a lot of timing with eyes. So you're flitting around the room, but you're also kind of timing the beats.
So you're looking at specific people. You're not just looking at...
I try and hit 92 beats a minute. Is what I try and hit. That's what I think. That's that for me is for spoken word the right. And it doesn't matter how fast you're speaking. Obama speaks at 92 beats a minute, but it's not like So it's like you're trying to hit that
Holy
beat. So I'll often
shit.
Listen to a playlist of 92 beats a minute to get
really.
And I've just noticed if you go fast, if you go slower, you don't get the applause breaks. You'll get the laughs. You won't get the applause breaks. It allows people to breathe. It allows people to kind of take in what's going on.
Wow.
What is your natural tempo?
It's about that. Yeah, it's not far off.
Wow. That's lucky. Amazing. Now, this may tie into this because something I read about you was that you once studied neuro-linguistic programming.
Yeah, I studied all that stuff. Like, it's a cheap way of doing therapy early on in life. You're doing therapy now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so much.
Yeah, I got beat up yesterday, boy. Wow. My guy came at me hard.
Really?
No, he was just like... He was, after I said something, he's like, you know, I'm starting to understand how your wife feels. And I'm like, oh, that's a low blow, Dr. Elman. I thought we were friends. I thought I was paying you. But so I had to kind of pick myself up. I think
I've got a weird relationship with therapy where I like the idea of it. And then I'm very much like, well, you hear about someone that's been in therapy 30 years and you go, the fuck are you doing? Just fix it and go. So I like the thing of like, I like CBT and I like cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right.
Because I think somehow just looking at those thought patterns, because I think a lot of the depression and anxiety around comedy, and most comics have got some level of anxiety disorder. And you go, because your mind is just like, certainly you two guys, your minds are whirring the whole time.
Yeah.
Thinking of the next line.
Right.
And you go, well, there's a flip side to that. There's a dark side. When you wake up at 4 a.m. and you don't have a script to write, your mind is still whirring. So the all the creativity, everything that dick jokes have brought you has also brought you a level of anxiety. And kind of making peace with that and having a gratitude for that is kind of the cure for me.
And so you were able to do that.
Yeah. So I still have, you know, a fair degree of anxiety, but it's kind of manageable. And you also take the rough with the smooth. You go, well, I'm not looking for a different way of being.
Right.
It was that thing of like the cognitive behavioral stuff is often about like thought patterns. If you Google it, like you don't need to go and see a therapist, Google it and read the thought patterns. You go, oh yeah, that's magical thinking. I'm catastrophizing.
And our brains are just so trained to go down the same rabbit
holes. But once
you
see it, you kind of go, oh.
But you also said that you're not trying to change basically yourself, right? You're saying it's like an acceptance?
Yeah, I think there's an acceptance of like, I think there's a weird perception of arriving somewhere. There's a thing in our culture of like, when I get this, I'll be happy. It's that thing of like, the pursuit of happiness is the wrong, it's the happiness of the pursuit. I really enjoy being a stand-up comic. I really enjoy the process. It's like, I'm sure you guys could care less about an episode of Family Guy, but the writing of it and the process and the doing it and the fun and the and being in the creation. And when you look back at your stand-up careers or whatever, the being in the trenches and talking about that shitty club with a thing behind a hot dog or whatever. That's the fun of it. The fun is doing it.
Oh, did you have experiences like, because you've listened to our show and I want to get into how you even came across it.
Listening to our show was his experience of his shitty experience.
I get it. I see where you're going with that. But when you were just starting out in stand-up, did you have similar kind of nightmarish London-based experiences?
Yeah, there was some kind of, you know, tough gigs and tough corporates along the way. And but not many in terms of going. I think I was very lucky in that I came into a graveyard, comedy-wise. There was not much going on. It wasn't a huge. It's a legitimate career choice now that you could be a stand-up comic,
right?
Which is great. But it feels like there was nothing going on in the UK, and then suddenly there was a boom.
Yeah.
And I don't quite know where it came from. I think that thing of like, I mean, gratitude is sort of the most important thing, but you go, the era that I grew up in was sort of brilliant because we'd had a little bit of stand-up comedy. You'd have seen like a Robin Williams or a Steve Martin or an Eddie Murphy.
Right.
It would have been a VHS tape.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have, it wasn't everywhere. It wasn't a cultural thing. And now it feels like stand-up is a medium where people are so, I don't know what it is. I think stand-up lives in the discourse between public and private speech. Ooh, you've got how people speak on the news and politicians speak, total bullshit,
right?
And how comedians speak, and you go, well, that how people speak in private, and that's, you know, a very different thing,
right?
And then comics are sort of mediating that, kind of the canary in the mine,
right?
It really feels like it's like people are loving podcasts because it's long form and it's people being straight. People just being honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can't avoid it here. Well, so since we're at the podcast topic, how the hell did you even hear about our podcast? You haven't seen our numbers, so it's shocking that you would have.
Yeah, we're
found
like
it.
Netflix will never release those
numbers.
Yeah,
I know.
It's huge. Well, no, me and the other three listeners are. No, it's a great little show. I travel a lot and I'm obsessed by. I'm quite dyslexic, so I tend not to read. I listen to a lot of things.
Right.
And I've got so I listen to lots and lots of audiobooks. And then I like that thing of like taking a break and listening to funny stuff. So normally I'll listen to quite serious things because it's kind of where you're going to get ideas from. It's not going to be, it's a hat on a hat comedy stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
comedy's totally. Like a treat. So I was traveling, I think it was in Canada on tour. And I was kind of going through like comedy podcasts and I saw, I think I saw your name. Your name came up on something and I'd seen you on Twitter years ago.
Right.
And was aware of you guys as writers. I'm aware of like, I'll often kind of look and see what people have written on and, you know,
right.
You know, you guys have got a great reputation. Great gag writers. It's like.
He has a great reputation.
Oh, please. He talks himself down.
Actually, that was my idea for the podcast. That was my throwing in ideas for your podcast.
Yeah.
The top five. I tell you what I'd love as a top five from you guys.
Yes.
Top five jokes that never made it. Jokes that never made a script, that you loved, that you adored, that never made the script.
I'll tell you one right now. I'll tell you one right now that I've been trying to get on a show or something since I started. And the idea is called the all-terrain dessert cart. And it's just that someone had invented like a dessert cart with knobby tires and shocks and they're bringing it out into the woods. And I don't know like why you'd need it. I don't know who wants it, but I wanted to build one when I was in late night and I've just, it's.
There's a restaurant in London called Oslo Court.
Yeah.
And they built, it's a nice building. It's like, you know, 300 apartments and it's just for nice widows to live in.
Yeah.
And it's got a restaurant in the basement. And the restaurant there has not, they opened it in 1973 and they have changed nothing since.
I love that.
And they have the dessert trolley. And it's like, it's almost like a theme restaurant now. It's like, oh, is this like a 1970s thing? Yeah. But no, it's not. It just
we'll
didn't change anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the guy doing the, oh, profiteroles. Oh, I see you have room for a little bit more. It's incredibly camp German guy. Oh, maybe some cheesecake for you. But the dessert trolley is like, it's lost in time.
Yeah. Yes, it has been. Well, also, Goldie, I don't know, did your warm cuts joke ever make air? Because I love
know.
That. Goldie.
Is that cold cuts?
Yeah. It was his billion dollar idea. Warm cuts.
I love that.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
I don't know what
much.
They are.
So, and you kind of talked about not, it was sort of a desert of comedy.
I was very lucky. I started out, I was working for Ally. I went to, you know, university or whatever, got slightly overeducated and then kind of came out. I read a thing recently. I think it's only 8 years ago they did the research. Your frontal lobe doesn't finish forming till you're 25.
Okay.
Like you're not finished. You're not like fully developed. I think it's different. I think it's maybe 23 for women, 25 for men. But your frontal lobe finishes. I really felt that. Like at 25, I kind of went, the fuck am I doing?
Yeah, like all of a sudden.
I'm working for Shell Oil? The fuck am I doing?
Were you?
Yeah, I was working for Shell Oil in marketing in London.
Whoa.
And going, what?
Wow.
I mean, listen, it's and that used to be how the world changes. Shell weren't the bad guys at the time.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Fucking petrol, great. Everyone's getting paid. Lovely.
Yeah.
And then left and joined. It was like joining the circus. I kind of went, I did a couple of stand-up gigs, maybe three stand-up gigs. I was watching. And I thought, you know that the reverse way you get into stand-up of like, I remember seeing Eddie Izzard at the Cambridge Corn Exchange.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. I mean, in his pomp. He was unbelievably funny.
Right.
And then I went to the Comedy Store in London, which is not the same as the one here, but it's pretty good. I saw three comics, two of them great, one of them was kind of okay.
Right.
And then went to, then you go to that a couple of times, and then you go to the clubs, like above a pub somewhere, and someone's doing an open mic, and you're like, I couldn't do, Eddie did, I couldn't do the Comedy Store thing. I fucking do better than these guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then your career is the reverse of that, where you go, you start in those clubs, and then you get the Comedy Store, and then you're playing those venues.
Right.
And you kind of, it always seems like it's only kind of baby steps. So you're kind of writing things and you try it. And I don't know. I got lucky as well. I met really nice people early on in comedy. And yeah, it's like having those, you can't beat your environment. There's other people around you. And then no one had a work ethic.
Right. Right. But you did.
Right.
Yeah. Like I did 300 shows, theater shows this year. I'm like obsessed.
But did you know right away, like you got on the first time and you did it and you got down and you just said, my life has changed? Or did you just kind of go, well, that wasn't so bad, I could do that again?
I think it was like, I think it was more that being a writer first felt like, I remember I always remind my manager I'm still with, when she first told me, I think you might be more of a writer. I was like, well, okay. And that thing of like going,
that
no,
used
I kind
to
of would
be insulting.
Be
up there. Yeah, I know. You know, that used to be like, fuck you, I'm not a writer.
Yeah. But you go, but isn't that the gig? I mean, it's like the thing of what's changed in rock and roll. Like rock and roll was about singers and then it became about singer-songwriters. You know, that kind of thing, Bob Dylan. I think comedy changed in that way in, you know, probably the 50s. What's that? Who's that guy? Cliff, who wrote The Comedians, that book. But that thing of like going, it's kind of singer-songwriters now. It's like your voice.
Right. So I read about you that, and you just kind of talked about it, your brain fully formed at 25 and you found yourself working at Shell Oil.
Hmm.
And from what I read, it said you suffered from depression, perhaps over this at the time.
I think like it's literally that simplistic of like, I wasn't depressed, I was sad. And I think there's a conflation in our society about people think they're depressed, but they're sad.
Yeah.
If you're sad, you're lucky. It's circumstantial.
Well,
if it's circumstantial, like if you've got a serotonin imbalance, if you've got a mental health problem and you're listening to this, like depression gets bandied around by people. Like it's like, oh, I'm depressed. No, you're not.
You're sad.
You're sad. You've made bad decisions in your life shit.
Right.
That's sad.
Yes.
But being sad, there's more stigma, but there's more you can do about it.
Right.
You've got agency if you're sad. We'll change it.
I would submit though, being sad and or depressed about your situation, is that just being British?
Yeah, maybe.
Is there just kind of an element of that where it's like, yeah, we're kind of all sad. We listen to Pink Floyd and now we've segued into Radiohead. So it's like, yeah, we're sad.
It's the same band, isn't it? It's the same band.
They're very similar.
Yeah.
Very similar. I love them both though. But so you wake up to this. Did you have any inkling before that of like, hey,
Were you even in like high school musicals or junior high plays? Nothing really.
I always think like if you meet a stand-up comedian on a plane or whatever, if you pass one in the street, ask them which one of their parents was sick.
Right.
Oh, wow. One of their parents was sick, either physically or mentally. Yeah. My mother was depressed, and I was the thermostat of vibes in the house. Yeah. So I'm very good at changing states in a room. I can come in and pick up
liven things up,
and that's the skill that you learn from whatever the terrible childhood trauma that you had. And both of you, I feel sorry, but it was clearly awful.
Yeah,
I feel Goldie, yours more so. But somehow it's given you this facility to make things funny and to make it okay. So there was always like growing up was my mother was very funny, but also very depressed.
Yeah,
and that thing of. So you get into that role and somehow it becomes, it's a personality disorder that you can do for a job, being a stand-up, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Like a massive personality flaw that you can grow corn with.
Somehow you can become cool with this huge defect. But as for your onstage persona, and let's call it that, is that just you and who you are? Or did you make a decision early on, like, I'm going to hit my mark and I'm just going to fucking nail you guys with jokes?
I think it was that thing of, yeah, I saw a guy, there's a guy called John Maloney, as opposed to John Mulaney. John Maloney, who's a British comic. And he did a thing at the Comedy Store and he got up and went, I'm going to do 10 jokes. And he told 10 pretty good jokes, like bang, 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 bang. Seeing that and going, I'd love to do an hour of that.
Yeah.
Like all killer, no filler. Just don't fuck around. And everything's got to earn its place. Everything's got to get a laugh.
Right.
And then it's that thing of like, you go, well, that takes a long time to do. It's a lot of writing.
Yeah.
But it's building with Lego bricks. So you're not looking for, it's not like being Michelangelo, you know, chipping away everything that's not
right.
The horse in the marble, whatever.
No, yeah.
That analogy of, you know, sculptor. Creating something sculptor. And it's the whole of a piece.
Right.
Well, when you referred to persona, something I'm curious about is, so when you do these sort of like hot button topics or hot button jokes, but you seem like very comfortable in person, you're very confident, like. I was at a party last night and I said something and I didn't think I wasn't trying to get a rise out of people. I was just like being honest. Like,
well, what did you say?
Well, okay. So yeah, it came up. My daughter was in the, my wife said, I met this person through my daughter, through a parenting thing. And he wrote the Tom Hanks movie about Mr. Rogers. And I just like very casually just said, oh, I hate Mr. Rogers. And everyone's like, what? And I was like, oh, I hate him. I mean, I just always found him so boring and creepy. And I was a Sesame Street guy. And I mean, you could just see like people's faces getting longer and longer. And they're like, you can't hate Mr. Rogers. I'm like, he's like super boring. He talked to you like you're a fucking idiot. And
he's
was
talking to me like I'm a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Well, that is kind of his job.
Right. But I.
This guy's so patronizing.
I just like. But I didn't think, I wasn't trying to, I was just saying, but I'm wondering, do you have that? Like when you're saying these opinions, do you seem to believe them and you seem to be right, but are you doing it to get a rise out of people? Or are you doing it because you're just like, I'm the only one who's like not insane here, which I believe that about Mr. Rogers, even though clearly I'm getting the reaction.
I don't know. I mean, I think that thing about going the controversial topics and being drawn to that, I think is there's a sense of divilment in it and going, but it has to earn its place. Yeah. I was with Jesse Joyce last night and it came to see my show and we're chatting about like super edgy jokes. Like if it gets the reaction before it gets the laugh, it's the order is very important. Like it has to be the laugh and then the sharp intake of breath. It's like almost jokes at their best, a sort of cognitive dissonance where you believe two things at the same time. You go, that is fucking hilarious. Oh my God, I shouldn't be laughing.
Yes.
But your conscience should always be late to the party. Your conscience should always be second because you're laughing and then you go, oh, I shouldn't. Oh, those poor people. But you should laugh first.
Yes.
And if you get it the other way around, it's very easy to just do shock.
Yes.
Okay. And to hit the topics that you go, well, I know that that's a controversial topic.
Right.
And it's a live wire and it will get a reaction. But there's no joke there.
Yes.
There's nothing. You just brought it up.
That's such a great...
It's so lazy.
Such a great point. And I feel like we've seen many people do that on stage. We've seen people get famous for it over the years, and it's very frustrating. So I'm glad you pointed that out. Something else, though, about the controversial topics, I feel like there have been a few along the way in your specials, where people have demanded that you apologize and said, you know, people have come out and said, condemned it and, and Jimmy Carr has done wrong. But you never do. And I respect that so much. But and I'm saying, that... where do you get the balls to like say to the Holocaust people like, well, I'm not apologizing, you know, like, what?
Well, I think it's that thing where you go, I got a call. Last time I got canceled, I got a call from, I've been canceled a bunch of times. But it's like this canceled and canceled. Like we're using it in the you got told off.
Right.
Let's right size it. I told a joke and some people didn't like it.
Right.
Yeah. That's what happened.
Yes.
So you go, there's sick children out there. If you're interested,
turned it on them.
there's important like stuff going on. But you go, you tell a joke, some people don't like it. Fine. It's not a big deal. I got a call from Louis C.K. is a good friend of mine.
And yeah, he's so funny.
He called me and he went. I went, oh man, this could be, this is bad. He went, you've only got to answer one question. Who's Jimmy Carr?
Right.
And I went, oh, you know, I don't know, I'm an edgy stand-up comic. And he went, okay.
Yeah.
So what do you want to do? Would you have told a different joke? Do you stand by the joke? Was it funny? Did the audience like, yeah, okay. Well then, just tell the joke. It's fine. And that thing of like apologizing for a joke, there's a bit in the new special about you can't go around apologizing for jokes.
Right.
Because it's a joke.
Yes.
So I have a plan for the next time I get canceled over a joke. I'm going to come out on the day of the cancellation. I'm going to say, I'm sorry. And the people that are offended by the joke will say, you don't really mean that apology. And I'll say, so you're saying I can say something and not mean it. Now you're getting it.
Oh my God. Wow.
Genius. They walked right into that trap.
Yes.
Well, it's that nice thing of like going, I think if you come and see me live at this stage, really, you know, buyer beware, there's going to be some stuff. But I like to think I'm an equal opportunities offender. And the conflation between jokes and opinions. When you get canceled over a joke, someone prints it in the paper. And there's a reason jokes don't work written down. It's like it's a spoken medium, right?
Yes.
It's like no one reads sheet music.
Yeah.
Right. No one, you can say I like Radiohead. There's no one going, oh, I bought the book of sheet music of Radiohead.
Yeah.
It's really good.
B flat minor.
No one does. Yeah. Stand-up's the same. You listen to it. You it's performed. That's so important. You don't read the thing. So when you read it in the paper, I mean, even I will look back at sometimes when I get canceled, you read it in the paper and go, fucking hell. But I told that in a theater at 10 in the evening to people that had just heard 90 minutes of comedy at the end of a sequence. Yeah. And you shouted it through someone's letterbox at 9 a.m.
Yes.
And it's always on Twitter as well. They go, this joke's terrible. Yeah. Which joke? The one I just reposted.
Yeah.
Motherfucker.
Right. I know.
Out of context.
Well, if you're so offended, don't retell it.
I know.
The apologizing, I'm struggling to think of a time when it's worked. But the only thing that has worked is what you described, which is where you just go, I'm just going to wait it out and they'll be mad about something else in 2 days and then everyone will go. But it's like when Drew Barrymore was like stumbling over herself to like, I brought in these.
Neil Brennan said it. Neil Brennan said this thing of like when someone got canceled, I think he said, give it a month. If anyone gives a fuck in a month, I'll make a statement.
Yeah.
But the world moves on. It's incredible how, there's moments in time where, I'm just trying to think of the last example of like when Will Smith hits Chris Rock at the Oscars.
Yeah.
And you go, no one, this is the story. For the rest of our lives, there won't be another story. This is it, guys.
Yes. Right.
This is the news now. Yeah. This is the only thing. I can't imagine anything else is going to happen.
Yep. Yeah.
And then a year later, I don't know.
Other things have happened in that time. I guess that you're kind of talking about it right now, but like, what do you make of this moment that, it feels longer than a moment, sadly, of this time that we're living through right now? It feels like to me...
How do you mean? In what respect?
That there's been sort of a regression in terms of like... what you can and can't say, according to people.
I don't know. I mean, there's that new book, Outrage, which seems pretty good. I think What Is was ever thus. I mean, guys couldn't use, you couldn't joke about pregnant women. You couldn't joke about, you couldn't swear on TV. You know, go back to 1970. George Carlin is still someone that, his material still works, right?
Yeah.
And comedy rots, really. It doesn't last.
No.
And George Carlin's still fucking funny. Those bits still work. The 7 words you can't say on TV.
Yeah.
You couldn't say those words on TV. You couldn't reference certain things. There's more freedom now than there's ever been. And you go, oh, you can't say things these days. I don't know. I was at the Wilton last night.
I said a lot.
I say you can. but the perception of, you know, so the hair suit, you can't say anything. You can.
Yeah.
But also it's like freedom of speech, and which I think is the most important thing, is not freedom of consequence. People can be upset.
Yes.
That's great. They just can't say that I can't do it.
Right.
Yeah, that's all right. So well said.
I agree.
Very well said. Someone who's thought a lot about this, clearly.
But I mean, you guys find that on the show? Like, what can't you say
on the show?
Well,
I don't live
We've
in
fear of
it. We've
been grandfathered in, you know?
Yeah.
Well, also, you can just stop looking at your phone and it goes away.
Right.
Right? Like, it's a consequence of being addicted to your phone to think that this is a real...
Yes.
And present danger, whereas if you just don't look at your phone, you go, I don't know, the sun's out, the clouds are out,
It feels like that thing of like, you know, that idea that the idea that what the papers think, what the news thinks, what Twitter or X think, and then what the general public think is like, they're three totally different things.
Yeah.
And the papers would love you to believe it's all the same.
Yes.
Right. Do you notice a difference between England and America in the way that they take in perhaps controversial topics?
Standing ovations in America. People love getting up at the end of a show. And I thoroughly applaud. Like, it's great That's because awesome. You're leaving anyway.
Yeah. Right?
you're on your way. You're either going to applaud sitting down and wait for the lights to come up and then get up. You get up now and give me the benefit.
Yeah.
But in America, they do. But in the UK... I could be the risen Christ. I could eviscerate for 2 hours.
They won't do it.
No, there's like, nah.
What's that about?
I don't know.
Is it not polite, maybe?
No, I don't know. It's like, I don't know.
What about the cancellation part in England or in Great Britain? Is it just as sensitive over there?
Yeah, I think it's as sensitive. But I think it's like, that's pretty universal kind of around the world of like, you'll you know, you can find that. People, you know, might be offended by something. And it's always the thing that affects them.
Right.
So it's like it's hard really in my any of my specials where you always get cancelled after you played it to, I don't know what the last one was, like a million people might see it on tour,
right?
And then it comes out on Netflix and 6 weeks later someone goes, hang on, you can't say that. What? I just did.
Hang on.
People really liked it.
People laughed a lot. A preferred audience in all your travels, is there one particular country that you think like, oh, this audience is just above and beyond?
I don't know. I think that thing about when you travel, it's often when it's the people that are indigenous to that place. So it's that thing of like when you go to, if you go to Iceland, if you go to Japan, if you go to India, if you go to Australia, when local people come and see you, when it's not like, oh, a bunch of British people came. Mm-hmm. That's like it. So it's for me, it's like the smaller towns tend to be better. Like LA last night was really fun, but San Diego was probably more fun the night before.
Yeah.
Like, so okay. New York's great, but if you play New Jersey and 1,000 people come out, it's like, it feels like you're the only game in town. So there's a little bit of that. Like, certain towns where you just go, you could play Radio City Music Hall and like anyone there had 15 other great options.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's just too much going on. This town's, there's too much.
Right.
LA is tough to get people out, right? Seems
totally. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Totally.
Well, yeah. I mean, even we've never been in person before. With a guest,
to do this. Like,
yeah.
To do
we
a
can't
podcast
even leave
to
our
get
house
us
to do
here.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took you to do it.
Yeah, I'll never forgive you for
sorry
making me.
You
be
guys
here.
Have met, though, right?
I mean, a couple of times. Yeah.
How come you guys stopped doing stand up? Because for me.
Didn't have to anymore.
Didn't have to?
Yeah.
I think it's a get to do.
Yeah, no, I know. I agree. We had different experiences doing stand up. I was the stand up to which Goldie was referring, Notepad. You know, I'm cooler than you attitude. And so I just didn't have much of a persona. I didn't have the right persona. I didn't have the right energy. I didn't have the right work ethic. All those things match with me being a writer who doesn't have to go up on stage.
Right.
Yeah. So
I got a little further than you did.
He did. He did it longer.
And yeah, I just realized 15 years in, the audience has spoken and they enjoy what I have to say, but they don't want to have to look at me. Like, I went on Kimmel, and I did...
Oh, they don't want to have to... God.
Yeah.
His opinion of himself.
I know.
Yeah. I just...
No,
I
they don't want... It's fine. I'm not... Like, I get it, but it's...
I
you know,
sort of don't... I don't think you know how you're perceived.
Agreed.
I don't think you have any idea.
He doesn't
late.
Hear me. I compliment him all the time. And
but it's like...
It.
But it's,
well,
I don't think thing. You can see it. I don't think it's going to change, but it's, and it's hilarious.
I was going to... specialist for one of my kids, and there was, you know, spectrum issue, and then I realized, oh, in trying to get a diagnosis for her, it's like, oh, I think I'm kind of autistic, but it's like too late. It's just, it doesn't matter at this point.
Really?
You know, like, I think I just can't absorb certain things. And so anyway, I did Kimmel, I did like pretty well, and But then even on the way out of leaving Kimmel, the audience didn't appear to recognize me, and I had just been on the show. And I thought to myself, I am lacking in something that is required to be a successful stand-up comedian, and that I just foresaw that it would be more and more frustration for me. And I, you know, like I could do well, but it felt like everyone was passing me. Everyone was doing better.
That's partly the problem with stand-up is you know, that kind of comparison is the thief of joy. It's so clear how everyone is doing.
Yes.
And that weird status game.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know how you ever get past that. I read a great book last year that Will Stuhl wrote, this book called The Status Game, about how like it's just an underlying sort of force in our lives.
Yes.
You know that thing of like when you go in a coffee shop and you order a coffee and someone comes in after you and they order a coffee and they get served before you.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't know any of these people and you're never going to see them again in your life. And you're livid, incandescent with rage.
Yes.
Where's my fucking coffee? It doesn't make any sense at all. But there's something in that. Like we're constantly playing these little status games.
Yes.
And in stand-up, it's like that thing of like, how's everyone doing? Yeah. What's the thing? Like you can't kind of, I sort of view it as, I'm quite strict with this on friendships in stand-up. If someone is successful, if they get a big show, Netflix special, whatever, if their success isn't your success, they're not your friend.
Right.
That's like a frenemy and you need to maybe just pull back from that person if there's a jealousy.
That's so well said. And I was going to ask about that too. Like, so you're at the, you know, the very top of the mountain, certainly.
I start off, I did my first Edinburgh. So Edinburgh's this big comedy festival. You go for a month and you do a thing. So my first Edinburgh was with, I did it with three friends. We like put on a show together. We all started around the same time.
Right.
And my friends were, it was Ricky Gervais and Steve Merchant.
Oh my God.
And a guy called Robin Ince. And I think Ricky and Steve are great to start with guys like that because you go, oh, you wrote The Office.
Right.
Oh, and like, I remember them writing The Office. I remember, like, I grew up in Slough, where The Office is set.
Oh,
and I remember,
great.
I remember driving Ricky and Steve around with a camcorder so they could get, like, the opening shots, like, of, like, oh where's the shitty place going to be? And telling them about, oh, the club used to be called Henry's. It was a Henry VIII themed nightclub.
Right.
And they went, oh, well, fucking put that in, Jim. That's fucking hilarious.
Wow.
But that weird thing of, like, going, when you've got friends that are that successful early on, like he was lauded as like, it was within like 2 years of starting stand-up.
Yeah.
The guy that I'd started with was like, oh, this is as good as Fawlty Towers. This is a phenomenal. You kind of go, oh, fuck it. All right. Well, I won't be the most successful then. Fine. It's quite good, I think, to have that as a, you know, everyone's got an ego. Everyone's kind of trying to, every stand-up is trying to be on the Mount Rushmore of stand-up comedy. And you go, well, just enjoy your life as well. Because no, there's no legacy. No one gives a fuck. Yes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you would know better, but I would say that you're in that league. You're in step with like a Ricky Gervais and a Stephen Merchant. I know, granted, The Office is what it is. It's fucking amazing. It's, I think, the greatest comedy show ever. But in terms of stand-up, like I've watched all, you know, many of Ricky Gervais' specials. I've watched many of your specials. And I feel like, you know, it's like great apples and great apples. You know, it's not something where I'm like, oh, well, Ricky Gervais is this Mount Rushmore character, but here's Jimmy Carr and I like him too. It's like I watch you out there and the way you just almost like you're like you wear the suit like you're a Beatle. You have this look like you're, you know, a news presenter. And then you get out there and you just absolutely rock with joke after joke after joke after joke, which is different from what those other guys do. It's different.
Yeah, I think but it's quite old-fashioned, isn't it? It's like, it is kind of, it's a bit more Bob Hope. It's like goes to another.
Yeah. Like, jokes it's are slightly edgier.
But it's a different era, isn't it? Because it's that thing of, I don't know.
Was there ever a time where you've thought, I don't want to wear a suit anymore. I want to wear jeans and I want to be like looser. Has that not even occurred?
No, and never more so than today. I feel I've made all the right choices.
He's pointing at Alex.
Everyone in North America is dressed like a fucking toddler. You're a disgrace. Can't. Put a fucking tie on. You're a grown man.
I know.
Maybe the self-loathing would go if you weren't wearing Crocs.
We should. We should come to work in ties. It would be great.
Honestly, you talk about finding yourself on stage when you got on, when I first stepped into Crocs, I was like, I'm me.
Yeah. You found
this
yourself.
This is it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. It's a very fun gig. I'm kind of interested in that thing of like when you stopped, you know, thinking, okay, right, I'm not going to achieve the thing there, but just the process of it is
But I was getting good feedback also writing.
Yeah.
And that, like, you know, you talk about, oh, I'm good at, you know, finding a proclivity for writing these jokes. Like, I might not be the best stand-up, but I found if people needed material, I could generate an idea always. And I was always trying different stuff, and none of it seemed to land and be the right persona. Like, I could do physical bits, I could do jokes.
Because you guys have, you've written on, I mean, you write on this, but I mean, you've written on the Oscars, you've written on like loads of kind of
roasts and that.
Yeah. The roast thing is like, I find that really fascinating because that's always like the behind the curtain of the roast. Because everyone on those, I've only done one, I did the Rob Lowe one.
Yeah.
And did it was, you work on that one?
I didn't work on that one.
Oh. It was so fun to do that because it was, it's kind of Avengers Assemble.
Yeah.
Where you go, you've got your guys, and it'll be.
But I imagine you wrote most of your stuff, or you had a
But a lot of people pitched ideas. A lot of people pitched ideas, and then it was like the okay, so it's that. So it's something about that. It's going to be about Pete Davidson, but it's going to be that kind of a joke. But it's what's the perfect wording? What's the? And then I always think that thing of like it's paring away. What can you get rid of? What doesn't need to be there?
Especially for a roast, it's good to have it. Nice concise. And lean and just like cutting, just literally.
Yes.
I mean, I think something
genuinely hurtful.
Yes. Was I wouldn't fuck her with B. Arthur's dick. That was like the ultimate.
That was a great roast. Great joke. That, I remember that.
That Jeff
roasts are so fun to watch.
What was it? It was Ann Coulter. I had a good.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Said she was the most. I looked her in the eyes and said, "You're the most hatchet faced, right wing, bigoted. Cunt alive, but it doesn't have to be this way. You could kill yourself."
Oh my god.
That is great. It just kept getting worse.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a certain mentality I think that you get into this, like whether you were doing that about her or me or yourself, like I love that. You know, like it makes you feel alive.
I know. I'm suddenly more awake.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're really fun to do. I think that thing of like Jeff as well is kind of really, I don't know, they feel, their roasts feel really fun. They really feel like a, because it sort of is a, it's almost joke writing as, it's the closest we'll ever get to sport. We never get to do sport, right? We can play a bit of pickleball or something.
Yeah.
Sad old man. Dominoes maybe is the only
thing. Yeah, that's my But the
idea of like going, you know, the roast and roast battle that Brian Moses and Jeff did at the store, that felt like, I remember one year in Montreal where they did a tournament and it was so fun. Like, because you would kind of get up in the morning and go, oh, who have I got tomorrow? All right, I've got Goldie. All right, okay. Well, what's he sensitive about? Oh, okay.
Several things.
Yeah. Well, do you get, you know, one of the other things was I found myself like not as jazzed about watching stand-up when I was doing it. Like, it felt like a magician going to watch magic. But you seem to have this passion for it.
I watch everything. Yeah, I watch all the specials, everyone's thing. I'd hate to run into someone I've not seen their late special. I'd feel embarrassed. I think it's that thing of like going as well, where's the game being played? You sometimes see people that they're not in love with their craft. Right. I always think like if you meet musicians, you go, what record would you buy?
Yeah.
Send me a playlist. That's always the thing. And it's always mind-blowingly great. Mm-hmm. I remember getting a playlist off a friend of mine who's a musician. And I don't know what we're talking about. We're talking about like glam rock.
Yeah.
I'm pretty well-versed in music. I most comics, I think I listen to a lot. And he said, I'll send you a playlist. He sent me 30 songs I'd never heard before.
Wow.
Like, and everyone fucking incredible.
Wow.
I think the thing with stand-ups as well, like if you're into it, like you just get into it. And then you can slightly watch the things that you don't have. Like, it's that thing of like when someone's just incredibly charming on stage and they've got like no material, like nothing, and they're selling out an arena and they're charm and it's all performance.
Yeah.
And you go, wow. I mean, if you can't learn something from that, you're a dummy.
It's so true. And it's so interesting. And I'm glad you have this attitude towards comedians because I think I've met many comedians who don't watch anyone else and kind of root for everyone else to fail. And just sort of play it off as like, well, I'm a comic, I'm twisted, I'm dark. But I love that, you know, you're there to buy.
It's a bigger pie, isn't it? It's that thing where you go, the best thing to happen to comedy is like, you know, Chappelle now can sell infinite tickets. Remember, like I did the bowl show with him last year when the guy came and tried to get him. We were there. But that thing of like going, selling out the Hollywood Bowl. I think more comics now could sell arenas than bands in America. I could name more comics that could sell than bands. Like, because music now has become, this is a very sad thing, really. Music's become like a scented candle. You put on a playlist and it's like, you don't even, like, I'm so embarrassed because I was so into music as a kid. And you now you go, oh, what's the record? What's playing? Right. Don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Don't know who this is.
That's true.
You'd
That's
have to Shazam it because who cares?
Yeah.
Which comedy seems like it's a smaller. There's so few. Brennan gave this speech in Montreal last year. He was talking about stand-up comedy and saying his point was there were 60,000 brain surgeons in the world. How many guys would you trust to do a special? Right. How many guys would you watch for an hour? Yeah. Oh, I mean, we might say 100, but 50 is close to the real answer.
Was it JC? I was talking to earlier this week, and I was saying, you know, when you used to watch a band, or I think maybe it was Alec, or I loved the Top 40.
Oh,
Casey Kasem's, our Diallo's episode, and you would hear, you know, number 18, and you would go, oh my God, that person's a millionaire. Like, they were all millionaires, now, like, if I go to a concert and you see someone on stage, you're like, they're broke. They need the money.
It's a weird thing. I was reading about this recently because it's happened in all the industries, right? So there used to be 600 books came out every year, and they all did great, or 1,000 books, and they all did okay, and a novelist did okay. Now there's 3 novelists that sell infinite records.
Yes.
We sell as many records now, as many records as were sold in the 70s, but Ed Sheeran, Taylor Swift, and Harry Styles sell all of them. Yeah. It feels like movies now. There's fewer movies. And they all, you know, so everything goes to the...
Everything has to be in Avengers. Or Barbie.
Like a blockbuster.
And it feels like the industry can't get into comedy. It feels like the industry wouldn't have picked these people. There's no...
Right.
It's just, no one's good before they're 40.
Well, what do you get approached with? I mean, because I imagine people see you on stage and then they say, we could use him in this, we could use him in this. Like, what kind of stuff, you're in Hollywood this week?
You will be,
kind of meetings
you will
taking?
Be thrilled to learn, no.
What?
No, I'm not thrilled.
I don't. No one offers anything.
That's crazy.
I've never been offered anything interesting. But I'm very comfortable with that.
Walk on in a movie where they say, "Oh, you could be," you know, even like an annoyed pointed waiter. I would just go like, "Yeah, he'd be amazing at that." You know, like he's a really memorable two scene.
No, I always thought I'd make a great Bond baddie.
Oh, yes.
Make a good bad
you
guy.
Would.
Oh, my God.
You absolutely would.
Your agreement on that quickly was troubling.
Sorry.
No. It's totally true.
Yeah.
But they're charismatic, those Bond baddies.
I think that's a very cool role.
But no, I also think, like, you could take infinite meetings in Hollywood. You could die of encouragement.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
That's true.
But you know what I mean? It's like that thing of, like, there's so much... And
we want to be in the Jimmy Carr business. We just have to be.
It's not a question of if we're going to work together. It's when.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please.
We want to take a percentage of Jimmy Carr's money.
It's weird. It's a weird thing being a comic as well, because you sort of, you've got, my friend said this thing to me recently, really stuck with me. He's a singer. He's very famous in the UK. Robbie Williams. He's like,
oh my God.
Millennium.
All that, yeah. Okay. He said this thing, and he said, I'm an entertainer in the true sense. If you don't love me, I don't love me.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And I went,
like a comedian, right?
Comedians are not that. So comedians aren't, we're entertainment adjacent. We're sort of in show business, but I desperately want you to love me.
Yes.
Entirely on my terms. These are my jokes.
Yeah.
I'm not changing one fucking word of it.
I see.
That's a big difference. Still, I desperately want to be loved, but there's kind of a paradox there. But this is what I brought.
Right.
So it's not that kind of, I'll do anything.
Wow.
Right.
Because it must be so, like being an actor as well, I don't think it's a better job. I think it's...
No.
You're reading out someone else's lines. You're waiting around for the phone to ring.
Yeah.
Someone's giving you permission. Like the great thing about stand-up, I think, is it's like, and the terrible thing about it for lots of people is it's self-assignment. You have to do the work yourself.
Yeah. Motivate.
Do you every day sit down consciously and say, okay, 3 hours worth of jokes, or do you, as you're just kind of walking around, you see something?
Walking around, and then the writing is the editing. So when I'm on the road, it's the editing. And then I've just done a thing this year of like just almost like the Johnny Jokes thing you do on this, doing new jokes at the end of every show. So do 90 minutes on stage and then get out a piece of paper and read 10 jokes.
I'm sorry, did you say 90?
Yeah.
Wow. 90 minutes and then new jokes at the end.
Yeah, and 2 shows a night.
Jesus Christ.
Just to think of the money. I don't know there's 90 minutes where I know I don't have to shit ever.
I could safely
be standing up here in a suit and not have to leave. That might have stopped my career.
You're the one person that's pointing out the bladder control is remarkable.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Do you have anything on like that helps you on stage, cue cards or a teleprompter that helps you along the way in your
show? Yeah, I'll often have like, if you're recording something, you'll often have like a little, you know, obviously for TV shows and stuff, you've got the prompt,
right?
Which I'm sort of terrible at with prompt. Yeah, I got a tip earlier. I got a tip from, you know, Anne Robinson, the Weakest Link presenter.
Oh yeah, sure.
Whatever. She gave me a tip. I met backstage at the BBC years ago, and she pointed out spoken word is written very differently to written word. So just like putting commas in where you need the commas when you're reading autocue really helps people.
Wow.
So if you're writing monologue jokes, it really helps to after every phrase put in the commas and the full stops rather than write it as a full paragraph.
Oh boy. Wow. I'm doing it all wrong.
So most of your night of your shows are memorized though, but you just have cues to help you along the way.
Yeah, and often the name of the town written on a piece of paper.
Well, where's
the town and the other shitty town to refer to.
Right. That they could all laugh at.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's where are the
Yeah, where are the rivals?
Where do you think the terrible people live?
Yeah, right.
Because they told us last night it was here.
That's big in America for sure. Yeah. Where is the next town that you'll be performing in?
Two shows in Anaheim tonight, and then I'm in some
We would say Anaheim is terrible. Here in LA,
yeah,
we would shit on them.
Yes, I feel sure
they can't shit back.
No,
so if they try, they can't. Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's Disney, isn't it? It's out that way.
Yeah, it's
just a lot of like people in flat brim caps and Acuras with Oakleys on the back of their head. Being belligerent, too red. And...
Not wearing cool Crocs.
Yeah. No, they'll have Crocs. Oh, no, they'll have.
They'll be decked out in Crocs.
What's next for you guys? What are you now?
Oh, my God.
So something that came up, and listen, you're not on the forums, presumably, but fans of the show.
The forums.
Stewie rips his dick off the movie.
Oh.
Is that
Chris,
not?
Chris,
is
Chris.
There not a movie?
Oh, Chris.
It's a lot of work.
I'm
working on an episode this week, and it's all I can do.
How is there not a movie? How is there not a
Chris rips his dick off? Is still my favorite pitch. I'm still laughing about it. The thing is, there's at some point there's going to be a Family Guy movie. Seth keeps threatening, but he also says that he fully has the idea for it, and I don't think Chris ripping his dick off can just be
the movie?
No. Oh, in the movie, right?
Yeah. What about the disappointing sequel?
Yes, that would be a very good disappointing sequel.
I mean, that's the one I'll get to work on, undoubtedly.
Yeah. Have you seen Ted 2? Might I mention that?
I saw him in, where did I see him live? I saw him in Montreal. He came one year and they did a live read of an episode.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Which was, it was kind of remarkable to see.
Yes.
Like that, the idea of like, that level of like voice.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
It's like witchcraft.
It's mind blowing.
Yeah, when he does like three or four characters on one page and just switches effortlessly, it's very cool to watch.
While writing notes condemning the script.
I know. Yeah.
Well, when he's recording for us, he cold reads them.
Yeah.
He switches from character to character on cold reads. It's like, it's brilliant.
Yeah. He's good at it. But you know what? It's about 98 degrees in this booth now. And Jimmy, you've been so generous with your time. I can't believe this even happened.
I know.
Yeah.
I can't
Thank
believe
you so
Thank
much.
You for talking about us.
No,
Thank
I'm,
you for
I'm,
listening.
I will promote the hell out of it. I think it's a great show. I think you guys do great work. I think it's really interesting as well for people in comedy to kind of get that little look. The people that you talk to as well, it's really interesting to see, okay, so that's a bit of the entertainment world. If you don't grow up,
right.
If you don't have parents that were in show business, you don't know.
Yep.
And now you can listen to something like this. And if you listen to 10 episodes, you have a pretty good, okay, that's what being a writer in Hollywood's a bit like. You kind of have a feeling of it. It is kind of sharing something. It's really nice. And I think that thing.
Someone finally noticed.
But it's really lovely to kind of see how it's done. I'm such a huge fan.
It was lovelier for us to have you here. And so thank you for coming across town in the morning to do this with us. We appreciate it.
You're still on tour, right? How much of your tour is left?
Yeah, Anaheim.
I know, but that's one show. What else is?
There's maybe 15 more shows this year, something like that. There's a bunch.
Okay, there's only like 15 more days.
I know.
Year.
Yeah. Right.
Do you have any other tours coming up after that?
Constant. Yeah, I've never been off tour.
It's constant.
I've never been off tour. I will take the kids away for a couple of weeks here and there, but basically I'm on tour the whole time. If there's a night, I'll do a show.
Well, amazing. Anyone who listens to us, if you happen to be in the same shitty town where Jimmy is about to perform, you should definitely go see him or watch any of his many Netflix specials or wherever you can stream them. They're awesome. They are master classes in actual stand-up comedy.
Actual stand-up.
Yes. Jimmy, you can put that in your bio. Feel free to steal that.
Thank you.
Jimmy Carr, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thrilled that I was invited to be part of this podcast.
Please. Yeah, I'm like John Viner.
Oh, God. Jimmy Carr.
God. I can't.
What a machine gun, a Gatling gun of comedy that guy is.
Yeah. And
it's just
nice guy.
Preparation meeting opportunity. And
intelligence.
Yeah.
Like, yes. The guy, I mean, he put us to shame. But let's say,
I know,
let's
but
not
also,
put it that
but
way.
Part of me goes, you know, if he'd stayed at Shell, would he be running the place?
I know.
Maybe they'd be totally green by now. He would have Shell all like
and
a solar.
People would be like, God, and their CEO's super funny.
I know, right. For a CEO, he's hilarious.
Very edgy.
Very sharply dressed, too. Like, yeah. Really kind of put us to shame.
What a prince of a guy.
Yeah, he was great. And he elevated us by being here. So thank you, Jimmy Carr.
Thank you.
So guess what? We're now going to do our top five, and I'll give it the little drum roll appropriate, but we got a targeted top five. So let's get in to top five.
Top five.
Oh, beautiful. Top five. We're doing it. Top five cars for Jimmy. For Jimmy. Top five cars. Goldie, you want to lead us? Or no. You know what? I'll go first, JC, then Goldie. How about that? How does that sound?
Go for it.
Good? All right, number five, I have the Dodge Challenger.
Okay.
I freaking love the Dodge Challenger. Tal and I went to a wedding in Palm Springs and rented a car from Hertz. And I'm a Gold Club member, no big deal, President's Circle, so I get to just choose whatever car. And they had an orange Dodge Challenger sitting there, and I was like, we're doing it this weekend.
That's
and
awesome.
It was superb.
I got to tell you, I just had a whole thing with Hertz where the last car I rented got hailed on, and it was like over $8,000 in damages, and we've been going back and forth.
Oh, no. Hey, well,
I'm not going to have to pay it, but just like sorting the insurance.
Yeah.
I know. Well, you know what? You know, we/you wrote that joke for Tom Brady. He's the Hertz guy. We reach out to him.
Oh.
This goes away.
Thank you.
All right. Number four. Thank you. Number four, best cars, Subaru Brat.
Oh, yeah.
Subaru.
God, did I... Yeah, as my dad says, Subaru. No, the Subaru Brat was just super cool when we were growing up.
Is that the station wagon?
Yeah, it's got a little back seat outside. Very cool.
Oh, I don't know.
Number three, the 1979 Pontiac Trans Am.
Wow.
A.K.A. the Smokey and the Bandit car. That thing was awesome. Awesome. Number two, the DeLorean from Back to the Future.
Yeah,
Gotta be. Yeah, total chalk. And number one, complete chalk, the chalkiest chalk, Magnum P.I.'s Ferrari. Oh, my God, did I want that car.
Yeah, it's like 170 horsepower.
I don't care. That thing looks like it's speeding in park. I don't care. All right, JC, take it away.
Okay, my number five is the James Bond Aston Martin DB5.
Excellent choice.
Ooh. Why, thank
Excellent
you.
Choice. I'm embarrassed that I didn't choose that.
Oh, okay. Well, don't worry about, because the rest of them, you'll be like, what are you talking about? My number four is the Jaguar XJS, just in general. I love that.
That was a great car.
Yeah, the old one.
My dad had one of those, I mean, back in the 50s.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
wow.
He said it was the worst car he'd ever owned.
Yeah.
And that he would drop it off on Monday, pick it up Friday for the weekend, and then drop it back off on Monday. To the mechanic.
I love that.
And I guess at one point when it rained, the floorboard would fill up with water, and their solution was to drill holes in the floor.
We figured
it
out.
That's brilliant.
We figured out the problem.
Anyway.
I love that. My number three is the Porsche 911.
Yes.
Great.
Okay, thanks. And number two, I had one of these. It was a 1988 Toyota pickup truck, just the original pickup truck. So sweet.
Those things are the famous ones that are like, it's gone for 200,000 miles.
Yes. Yeah. Love it. Love it. And then my number one was is the BMW 2002. Anywhere from like 72 to like the 80s. Yeah. They're the sweet, tiny classic. Little cool classic cars. Yeah.
Goldie's a big Beamer guy.
Okay. Top five cars. Number five, if you know, you know, white Ford Bronco.
Ooh. Oh, wait, OJ. Like OJ?
Yeah.
If you
Bronco,
know, you know.
Bronco. Perfect for getting your buddy out of town and then back into town.
Don't joke.
You made an Not OJ quite joke escaping. And it was good.
Number four, I owned this car during COVID. It was the greatest car, but it only got 9 miles a gallon. The Ford F-150 King Ranch.
Oh, sick. Yeah,
that thing was sweet looking.
It was amazing. Number three, MacGruber's Miata.
Oh, yes.
MacGruber.
KXBR 191. No, that was the license plate.
Oh, the license plate. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Writing it down.
Number two is from the movie Sideways, the Saab 900 convertible, 1988,
nice.
I believe. Yeah. I used to have the hardtop version of that when I moved out here. And number one is the car I drive now. I call it simply the greatest boring car ever. Ooh. The Toyota RAV4.
Oh, there's nice.
It's dynamic in its boringness.
So many different things bore you.
Nothing will ever go wrong. You'll never be noticed. You'll never think about it once.
Yep.
Wow, that's nice.
It's fine. I don't think I'll ever drive anything else.
There you go.
That's awesome. I love
Ringing
it.
Ringing endorsement.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was fun. And next week, our top five, we're going to be doing It's My Choice. We're going to be doing top five most depressing songs.
Aww.
I feel like we've set that up maybe once before, but yes. We're really doing it
next
really
week. We're really doing it.
So get depressed, get sad, and get singing.
Yeah, for your New Year's.
Yeah. And now let's close the show, as we do every week, on a high note. Oh, Tom and Max. We miss you.
Always.
Who wants to? Anyone want to go?
I'll go. It's a little early for this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think I fucking fought this year to a draw.
Oh.
And I'm just calling it a draw. I took my lumps. I was on the canvas, and then I just got up, and my eyes are closed with punches, and my face is slathered in Vaseline. But I fucking fought it to a draw.
Yes, yeah. This is like the Sly Stallone speech in whatever Rocky that was. Life knocks you down. What will you do when you get back up? Well, I'm glad you fought, because for you to say that you fought this year to a draw, like, I take that
That's
as a very
good.
Positive thing.
Yeah.
I take that as you
it's
saying,
fine.
Like, fuck
it's
you.
Fine.
It's fine. It's the RAV4 of years.
Of years.
What do you got, JC? What's your high note?
My high note is I'd love to give a little shout out to Hillman Hollister for helping us out with Jimmy Carr.
Think of another one.
Okay.
Think of another high note.
Why? Tell me.
I'm just kidding. I'm teasing. I love Hillman. I'm just saying.
I was like, oh,
that
fuck.
Wasn't good enough.
And also, Abby LaValle, she also stepped in a little bit and helped a little bit. But Hillman came in early, helped me set up the cameras, which, you know,
right.
We'll use some of the footage. But
thanks, Hillman.
But thank you.
Thanks a lot, Hillman.
No, it was really appreciated.
Some good angles you got there, Hillman. All right, my high note, it's time to bust out the tissues here. After a very long
jizz?
After yeah,
wait,
what you're going to be so mad that you just said that. After a very long and hungry life, our dog Dutch is no longer with us.
Oh boy.
He gone.
Is that because of Hillman?
No.
You should not have done that.
Sorry.
Dutch is dead. She was a good girl.
but now she gone.
Sorry.
No, yeah, you know what? It was her time to go.
Yeah.
As decided by us because we'd had enough, but it was her time.
So were you in the room and you're holding her? You is that
the,
how it
the
works?
Room where it happened?
Dread that.
I know. I was not. I have been before, but I was not. I was far away. I was at work in L.A. And Tal was on duty. She's been there for many of these passings. But yeah, Dutch had a great life. And she was a really sweet dog, always incredibly hungry, just like up to the last day, just voraciously hungry. And anyway, we're now down to two dogs, which makes things like sort of easier, but yeah. I miss her.
Oh,
and
sorry. Yeah.
She was a good dog.
Oh, man. Sorry. I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought you were going to jizz.
I know. Wouldn't it have been better if I just jizzed than all that crap?
Oh, my God.
JC pressing he gone at the just most inopportune time.
Don't do that. I'm already saying if we're still doing the podcast when Lloyd goes, please don't do that.
What do you mean?
Not to Lloyd.
Well, if Lloyd dies and we're still doing the podcast, I don't want a he gone. And
I
Lloyd
promise.
I love that Goldie's getting angry, too. I think it was because I shit on your helmet.
We should just give you
lists
of people that you can't egon that are just taped to your monitor. So you go, let me consult the list. No, okay, there we go. Okay.
I'm sorry. Don't be mad. Are you actually
Obama, even? We're not doing a egon.
Yeah, let's hold off on the egon for Kilby.
Oh, no.
Larry Bird.
Yeah, Larry Bird might get a ego.
I need to start writing these down.
Jennifer Connelly.
Yes.
Jennifer Connelly. No, don't you dare.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is the list. This
no
is the list.
With Tom Cruise.
No.
Okay.
All right. We've rambled. I think I had one drink before this little wraparound segment, and I think it's made it like twice as long. Okay. So thank you. Thanks, Dutch. What a wonderful tribute that was.
Yeah. Thanks. She gave you the best years of her life. Gets back.
We just get
what are your memories? She ate a lot. Good dog.
And she gone.
Oh, don't forget the jizz guy over here. We had the jizz guy and he gone.
Listen, I'm just trying to get something going. I don't know.
All right. Speaking of he gone, let's get out of here on Christmas. Jimmy Carr, thank you so much. Thank you too for being awesome.
Thank you
all for listening. And we will talk to you again next week.
Next year.
Ooh.
Oh, next week.
Oh, next week. Chemical.
Get pushed to them anyway.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
And it's beginning to smell a lot like rat piss.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's fine.
He's like, guys, trust me. I'm a cunt.